Life,
a podcast of the cinema,
starring you, Alonzo Duralde, host of, co-host of What the Flick, co-host of Who Shot You on the Young Turks. Wait, no. Okay, Who Shot You is on Maximum Fun.
Yes.
Young Turks
has What the Flick.
What the Flick is on the Young Turks Network.
Right.
One is a YouTube show that's What the Flick, and Who Shot You is a podcast.
Correct. Like this one.
Like this one.
But it starts more interesting.
But different. No. It doesn't. I've listened to it. And what else do? You're also the you're the film reviews editor of The Wrap.
Correct.
It's a website on the internet.
It is.
It's a .com.
It's a .com.
Yeah.
And you are Dave White, occasional film critic for The Wrap, co-host of this show.
I like to think of myself as a regular contributor to The Wrap in the film review department.
All right. Well, that's
occasional makes it sound like I just sort of dilettantishly drop in.
That's
when
how
I deign,
you have described yourself. You are regularly featured.
When I deign to review one of your little
for
films.
For The Wrap, you have a review up that went up this morning.
This morning.
Of the new Alexander McQueen doc called McQueen. So
yes.
People should go check that out to read your stuff.
Yes. I'm a writer, and sometimes I'm not great, and sometimes I'm okay. And sometimes I get excited. Sometimes I get excited about a movie like McQueen because I think it's really lovely, and I spend 4 hours trying to figure out how to tell people how lovely it is.
Yeah, writing
and
reviews,
how sad it is. And
writing
you know.
Reviews of good movies is really hard sometimes. It's much easier to write a review of a bad movie.
Yeah, true. First timers, what else should they know?
We are husbands.
We're married, and
and we have a Patreon page, but more on that later.
Much, much later. A footnote, really.
I have no problem with leading with that sort of information, but whatever.
I know. I just, you know, okay, so here's a good example. I went to the Marciano Art Foundation last weekend with our friend Chris.
Uh-huh.
And we were in the gift shop after.
Right.
And they have a selection in the gift shop of art zines.
Okay.
And, you know, I like a good art zine.
Oh, I know you do.
Especially if it's from a real artist. So there's a real artist out there. His name is Matthew Locke that I'm a big fan of. I'm such a big fan, I actually bought one of his drawings about 10 years ago.
I love when Andy Griffith played him.
His name is Matthew Locke.
Okay.
People do call him Matt sometimes. I don't know this about what they do personally, but in his public professional life, sometimes it's Matthew, sometimes it's Matt.
Okay.
You got any more jokes?
Oh, invariably.
Okay.
They'll come later.
Thanks for all the jokes. So, now I have not heard, like, as my family used to say in Texas, a hide nor hair about his whereabouts, his work, his anything in years. Like, it was as though he fell off the face of the earth.
Uh-huh.
So I was very surprised to see this, this zine, like a pretty fresh one.
Mm-hmm.
I bring it up to the counter. I'm going to pay for it. The guy goes, are you familiar with his work? I go, yeah, I'm a big fan, and I actually own his work. And
all of it.
I own everything. So anyway, and the guy's like, this, and he says to me, this excites me, because I don't meet people like who know that this guy exists. And I said, well, I've got to be honest, I haven't heard a thing about his work in like 6 years. Like, it's as though he stopped existing. And the guy said to me, he hates to promote himself. Like, he just, outside of the work and outside of doing the zines, he hates to promote himself because he thinks it's gross. And I said, I fully understand.
Well, when you start selling individual podcasts for whatever this guy makes on arts, then yeah, we can be laid back about it. But right now, volume.
I want you to understand that Matthew Locke is not a famous artist.
Okay.
And therefore, you can still buy his drawings pretty dang cheaply.
I see.
Yes. So it's not like a, you know, it's not like I got in on the ground floor and then he blew up.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But you did get the art nod at the
That's not the point of this story. The point of this story is that I found someone in the world who knows this artist who I think is really fantastic. And the reason more people don't know about who he is because he won't play the game. And the guy at the counter was like, I think, you know, he's going to be a decades-long simmering sort of, you know, presence. But so I think eventually people will notice him.
So he's been making stuff for the last 6 years. You just didn't know about it.
I just didn't know about it.
And if you don't know.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not that ear to the ground all the time. But, I mean, it's a thing I follow.
Yeah.
But so anyway, I understand. The point I'm trying to make here is I understand the reluctance to impose on people the... Hey, everybody, buy my thing. Hey, everybody, subscribe to my thing. Hey, everybody, here we are. Woohoo, woohoo. You know, like,
You're the Gabu of podcasts.
There's a way that I like to promote us and a way that I don't like to promote us.
Okay.
And I like to be not pushy about it.
Fine.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll promote another podcast that I happen to be on right now.
All right.
Go check out Tinseltown, which is a really entertaining podcast. One of several now year-round podcasts about Christmas movies, hosted by the very funny Brian Lynch, a.k.a. The Mayor of Christmas. And he had me on to talk about one of my favorite holiday movies, the 1970 Scrooge. And at various points in the conversation, you'll hear this loud ripping sound that it was Dave White... using packing tape for our aforementioned Patreon subscribers.
For sending out items to Patreon people.
Yeah. So it all comes
full circle. I am told that you don't hear the packing tape.
Oh, I heard it.
Oh, you heard it? All right.
But I apologize to Brian about it. He goes, oh, believe me, much worse audio stuff has
I am also
led into
told this,
show. This
week on Twitter that people talk about how podcasters are always apologizing for the background noise that keeps showing up in their podcasts and that the listeners never hear. So I'm confused about this because I very clearly, with my extreme hearing loss, I am very confused about this because when I play back this show and I listen to an episode, you know, just to hear if we screwed things up or not or if we were terrible or cool, I hear the helicopters flying overhead. I hear the dogs barking in the back. I hear the street noise because the windows are always open.
Right.
I hear everything.
Maybe they just don't care. Maybe you hear this beeping truck.
I hear the garbage truck out there right now, making the beeping noise.
So we were off for a week by sheer accident because my laptop died, but now it's alive again. So thanks, Genius Bar.
They removed all your stickers.
They did. They gave me a new shell, so I had to start all over again with just, well, for one thing, not only did I lose my JCRT stickers,
right?
But my massive sticker,
oh yeah,
and that one that you gave me—that's a word balloon that says your YOU'RE. And even going all the way back to the first sticker,
I put in your 2017 Christmas stocking.
You did. I had a sticker for the David Gordon Green movie Prince Avalanche.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Anyway. It's on a floor somewhere at some Apple processing plant being, you know.
Now all you have on there is what?
Are we talking about a thing?
Why don't you tell everyone what the thing is on your laptop?
Well, look.
And then I will explain at the end of the episode
how
you might get one.
I guess you'll be seeing it on What the Flick next week.
You sure will.
So I might as well let the cat out of the bag. It's a linoleum knife sticker, and it looks great.
It's like 3x5-ish, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's like a 3x5 file card size. It's not small.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ordered a big roll of them, and, well, we'll talk about it at the end.
Yes.
When we do our self-promotion.
That's right.
Yeah.
One day we'll be on stop signs with bands.
Stop linoleum knife. Why don't you explain to everybody what we did this morning?
Yes. Well, this morning, I'm in the middle of Outfest right now, which has been great. We've gotten really wonderful feedback about the films. We've been showing some great stuff, including, by the way, friend of the show Drew Droege's one man show, Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, has been filmed for Broadway HD. So if you subscribe to Broadway HD, you can see it. But we had the world premiere of that earlier this week at Outfest.
What about? Does it count? Do you have to be on the show at least once to be called a friend of the show?
Yes.
Okay, well then, listener to the show.
Uh-huh.
Robert Torres.
Oh, that's right. Yes, had a short in the festival.
Had a short in the festival.
And surprised me by telling the entire audience that he listens to the show. That was a funny moment.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Robert Torres. He said he would send it to me so I could watch it.
Oh, cool.
Promised. Okay. I promised I wouldn't watch it on my phone.
That's fair.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't watch anything on my phone. The only thing I watch on my phone is Whoopi Goldberg tearing into Jeanine Pirro on The View.
And why not?
Because that's what, I mean, that's what The View deserves most of the time.
But yeah, no, it's been a lot of terrific movies. 1985, Cola de Mono, stuff you'll be hearing about over the next year. Very excited tonight to go see the documentary Dykes Camera Action. I love a good doc about filmmaking.
Yes.
And this is a kind of a history of out lesbian filmmakers from Barbara Hammer to, like, you know, Desiree Akhavan.
Yeah.
Featuring a lot of people we know, or a lot of people I know anyway. So because of Outfest, I've been missing press screenings this week and haven't really had time to go see stuff. So this morning, Dave and I bought ourselves tickets to Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Isn't it called Mamma Mia 2?
No.
Here We Go Again?
No, it's Mamma Mia colon Mamma Mia exclamation point colon Here We Go Again
exclamation point and then colon.
Uh-huh. I think
that's probably correct and it's probably accurate.
Yeah.
And it's you know, nothing matters, so that's fine.
That became your mantra after a while.
Nothing matters.
Every time I would raise questions about what year is this supposed to be, and how did this person do that other thing? You're like,
it's set in 1979.
Well,
the flashback is set now, and it's also set in 1979.
Right.
So the flashbacks take place in 1979. By the way, going in, we are going to spoil the entire film for you right here and right now. And I think the nothing matters mantra comes into play here.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you know how it ends, because if you walk into Mamma Mia 2 thinking that there's going to be a surprise,
the plot is important. Yeah.
And in fact, anything that might be a surprise has already been shown to you in the trailer.
Pretty much.
Like, if you didn't know that Cher is in the movie, they give you the Cher reveal in the trailer.
Yeah.
They
built the trailer around the Cher reveal.
Yeah. And if you think that something bad is going to happen to anybody and there's going to be a lasting bad consequence to anyone, that's also not true. the only thing that could even be considered remotely a spoiler is the appearance of the star of the last film.
Yes.
But I think everyone already knows that too, right? She's in the IMDb page.
That she's in it, but only a little bit.
And furthermore, any spoilers that we give you, and as far as I'm concerned, these are selling points.
Well, and again, it's like, let's think about what the word spoiler actually means. Like, is the movie spoiled by any of this information?
No.
No.
Is the movie spoiled all by itself by existing? That's up for you to decide. I didn't say yes.
I said yes.
You and I are on a whole different page here.
I know we are.
We don't agree.
I know we don't.
About Mamma Mia.
Yes.
Exclamation point, colon, here we go again. Why don't you talk about this film and what happens in it? I wrote down a lot of notes.
So, has Tim Grierson been on the show? Have we had him on yet?
I don't know. I can't remember. Maybe.
Hmm.
Tim Grierson, do you even listen to us? Have you been on this show before?
Anyway.
If you have and we forgot you, we apologize that we forgot that you
friend
were
of the host, if not friend of the show, we don't know, Tim Grierson, had the gall to compare the plot line to Godfather 2.
He's not wrong.
Which is...
Where is the lie?
Technically correct, but like, I just as soon compare it to Paranormal Activity 2. But basically, you have flashbacks and a continuation of the story of the first movie.
Yes.
Laying on top of each other. In the modern...
Lovingly entwined.
In the modern segment, which again, is this 10 years after they got married in the movie 10 years ago? Or have we only jumped ahead a little bit? We don't know. Amanda Seyfried is restoring the hotel on this Greek island. Her mother has died, and she...
You guys, Meryl Streep's dead.
Meryl Streep's dead. And so she wants to redo it all and have a big, splashy, grand reopening. Meanwhile, her husband, Dominic Cooper, went to New York to take this hotel management course or something. And
do we think it's just a hotel management course?
No, she said you were learning the hotel business.
I thought he already like was a hotel guy.
Well, again, how much time has elapsed since the last movie? We don't know. Anyway,
they haven't aged. It doesn't seem like 10 years later, they look the same,
pretty much
fresh and dewy as they did before.
He's been offered a job, and will he stay in New York or will he come back to the Greek island? I wonder. As
I wrote in my little notebook, she had better get everything she wants. Guess what happens, you guys? She gets everything she wants.
As Amanda Seyfried putters around the island and misses her mom, we get flashbacks to
1979,
which, if the movie is set now, would make Amanda Seyfried's character 39 years old, which is super implausible. But again, nothing matters. So in 1979,
does anyone use the internet in the contemporary scenes, in the modern scenes? Does anyone talk about the internet? They do in the first film, though.
Yeah,
don't they
mention the internet in the first film. So there's smartphones in this one.
Oh, there are?
Yeah.
Okay, so 10 years ago, the internet existed in the original film.
Yeah.
And they've got smartphones now.
Yeah.
So it's now.
Yeah.
Okay, so she's 40.
Yeah. Right. So we get the Young Meryl Chronicles in 1979,
played by Lily James.
Who people keep telling me I haven't seen the movies where she's really amazing, but I guess that,
you watched Downton Abbey.
I guess
she
that's
was
true because I've seen her on all the movies where she's not amazing. I did like her in Downton Abbey, fine.
Yeah,
but whatever.
Sure you did.
And my joke on Twitter was, if she's supposed to be 1979 Meryl Streep, I do not want to see her Kramer versus Kramer.
Well, she doesn't want to see yours either. So
fine.
You like them apples?
So she graduates from Oxford, Cambridge.
British University.
British University on a river, whichever one that is.
Is it college graduation?
Yes.
Or it's not high school graduation?
No, it's college graduation.
Look, you don't really know what it is because they jump right into When I Kissed the teacher.
Yes.
And they do a big whole production number. And it's a wonderful way to kick off this absolutely stupid movie.
And Celia Imrie might or might not be the teacher in question.
Like, she maybe had a makeout session with an older female teacher. Like, it's confusing because she's the teacher who shows up and sings and talks about kissing the student.
Yeah.
And I was like, so you made out with Amanda Seyfried?
No, with Lily James.
With Lily James?
Let's see that movie.
Hot. Yeah. That's like that's like that Cate Blanchett movie with
Judi Dench.
What's that movie called?
I can't remember.
That was a good movie.
It was, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so she decides that she wants to see the world. So she goes to Paris for a hot second, where she hooks up with young Colin Firth, who is a virgin because he's deeply in the closet, and
yeah,
they sleep together after he sings Waterloo to her in a restaurant where the maitre d' is dressed as Napoleon.
Get it?
Because in Waterloo, Napoleon
did surrender.
And this is the kind of movie where whenever they can point to a thing that they're singing about, they will point to a thing they are singing about.
Look at my potato.
As I sing the potato song. There's no reason for there to be a potato here, but we're doing the potato song, so we had to truck in some potatoes.
There's a wonderful, highly indicative camera shot of the piano player in the restaurant.
Yes.
But you only see his back.
Yes.
And he starts playing like Waterloo. Mm-hmm. And when I saw his back, I thought, is it Benny or is it Bjorn? And then I thought, it's Benny, because Benny was the keyboardist.
Yes, and Benny, I believe he had a cameo in the first one, too.
Did Benny have a cameo in the first one,
too? I believe he did.
I don't remember him being in the first one.
I have not seen the first one in 10 years, but I remember. But then, of course,
in the middle of the production number of Waterloo, you see Benny turn his face to the camera
and
sing along to the chorus.
It's like cartoon Mark Shaman on South Park, you know, when he like looks at the camera and looks at it while playing piano.
First, daddy bear of the film, Benning. There will be more.
But not the last. Yes. Okay. So we cut back and forth between Amanda Seyfried, who apparently like has set up this whole big opening party for the hotel without realizing that she lives on a Greek island where storms happen.
Storms.
So a storm happens and that's bad.
And it blows everything away.
And then
the party gets completely destroyed.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Lily James,
including like giant bowls and trays of food for people that aren't showing up for like another day or something.
No, that comes out later.
Oh, okay. That was
confused. All the moussaka.
Like, there's so much food, and I'm like, well, where are your guests? Like, shouldn't that be covered or heated or chilling somewhere
in a chafing dish?
It reminded me of the Sex and the City 2 movie where the giant bowl of macaron is happening
in the desert,
and no one's touching it. And I was like,
give me that back. Meanwhile, Lily James is discovering this island on her own where the farmhouse is falling apart, but she has a vision that one day she'll turn into a hotel.
Right.
Because she's a white colonizer and the world is her oyster.
Now, let's be a little more fair.
She can just show up anywhere and be like, mine! Droit de domaine!
She didn't demand that they give her the entire building when she showed up, but the old Greek lady said, I give it to you.
Yeah, but she starts squatting there without having any idea who owns it.
You're right, she does. Okay, she is a colonizer.
So it's basically an excuse to go through these sort of B-level ABBA songs, since they burned off all the biggies in the first movie, but because they know that you don't want to leave without hearing Waterloo, Mamma Mia, and Dancing Queen again, you will hear Waterloo, Mamma Mia, and Dancing Queen again, and Super Troopers.
They did do Waterloo, like, I guess they sang Waterloo in the first movie, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they sing it again in this movie.
Yeah.
Because who cares? Because halfway through the film, they've already gone through all the second-tier ABBA hits that they've got in their bucket.
Yeah,
and so they're like, you know what? Let's just sing all the other songs again. No one cares. Nothing matters.
I was saying I wanted there to be a new character named Elaine so we could get that song. Or that aliens would show up.
UFOs.
Or
there could have been UFOs in this movie.
You know what? She's opening.
It would have been reasonable.
She's opening a hotel. You don't even need UFOs to sing The Visitors. You are opening a hotel. It's right there. The Visitors.
But it would have been better.
Well, sure, it'd be better if there were aliens. But UFOs. instead of a UFO and aliens, we get a helicopter and Cher.
What if they're saving the UFOs for Mamma Mia 3?
Oh.
And The Visitors will be sung.
Mamma Mia Encounters of the Third Kind.
And then in the Mamma Mia 3, the Meryl Streep hologram from The Giver can show up. Because in this one, it's just Meryl Streep's ghost.
Yes.
Meryl Streep's ghost shows up to sing a song.
Yes.
But she's not going to hang around forever.
No.
You're going to get that Meryl Streep hologram for Mamma Mia 3.
But here's the thing, that you would even make Mamma Mia 2 when Meryl Streep says, you get me for 3 days. Like, that just seems like...
They did make it, by the way. They did make Mamma Mia 2. We just saw it this morning.
I know, but I'm just saying, you would think that Meryl Streep not wanting to do this again would be your deal breaker. But no, apparently not.
Anything can be worked around.
Because we want to hear more Amanda Seyfried singing.
You have a bigger problem with her as a singer than
she's
I do.
Better this time than in the first
she
movie.
Is she's had some singing lessons better around.
I'll tell you,
she's more in control and more assured of herself.
Sure.
She's a grown woman now.
For this, for me, and even with like Christine Baranski and Julie Walters, who are like old school stage hams and know what they're doing here.
Yeah,
Julie Walters was very awkward in the first one. She's better this time too,
right?
The movie did not click in for me until Cher arrives. When Cher starts singing Fernando, I'm like, Oh, yes. This is what I want. I want A, people who can actually sing, and B, people who are actually cartoons. Because that's what this movie is.
You sure got a funny way of showing it, because when Cher did show up, I applauded openly and loudly in the theater. And it was just us, you and me, we were the only men in the theater. And
you were bothering the ladies.
It was 9:15 in the morning. It was a 9:15 a.m. screening at the Grove.
Yes.
And I started applauding. I didn't whoop. I didn't yell. I just started applauding, and you made me stop.
Well,
and those ladies were not applauding for Cher. And someone has to applaud for Cher.
I was worried they were thinking you were being sarcastic or something. I'd already had some woman scold me about having my phone on while the trailers were running and the house lights were up.
Well, let's I'm going to just be technical with you for a minute.
What?
You should put your phone away during the trailers.
I don't know. I don't agree.
You should. I'm not going to yell at you for not putting your phone away during the trailers, but it sets people like me on edge because we think, people like me and my friend who sat behind you, I don't know her, but she's my friend.
Even when the house lights are up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the trailers are on. Things are going. We're getting perilously close to the time of the film, and you're still playing boing boing on your phone.
I was checking email, and I could stop at any time, which I would as soon as the lights went down and the credits started, which I did miss.
All right. Well.
Anyway, when Cher first arrived and you were clapping, that was a bit much. But when she starts
It was
singing,
not a bit much. It was appropriate. Well, it was right. Fine. Cher deserves to be applauded.
When she starts...
When she walks around in the world... If people aren't applauding Cher everywhere she goes, to the gas station, to the grocery store, there's something wrong in this life.
When's the last time you think Cher walked into a grocery store, let alone a gas station?
She lives, where does she live? Like up in Malibu?
Yes.
They got grocery stores up there?
Yeah, and she has an army of assistants that go on her behalf. And they know exactly which salt-free, gluten-free thing she wants.
I want to believe that I could walk into the Malibu Gelson's and see Cher. At which point, I would applaud.
That said, I do think people probably do applaud her wherever she goes, just as a matter of course. Oh, but boy, this movie. Until Cher arrives, I was cringing. I mean, I told somebody later, like,
Say your piece. I'm not going to interrupt you. Say your piece. Say what you think.
I got my Kegels in because I was just butthole clenching the whole time. Here's the thing. I love musicals and I love ABBA, but there's something about these, and I will say this. This movie is leagues better than the first Mamma Mia, which was directed by the woman.
Well, I mean, yes, the first one was inept.
Yes, that one was inept. This one is just insipid. But like, you know, the first one was directed by the woman who did the stage show. And like a lot of the stage directors who then do their movies, looking at you, Hal Prince and A Little Night Music, they don't know how to like tone, like how to dial the performances down to screen size. You know, the camera is right there. It's not in the third balcony.
Okay.
This time it's all Parker, and I think Richard Curtis co-wrote the script. So like there are some laughs that land. There's some charming stuff. You very much liked, is it Tracy Keenan Wynn? Is that her name? Who plays the mini me of
young
Christine Baranski?
Christine Baranski.
Yeah,
she is a legit delight.
She is doing a very funny kind of dead on impersonation of Christine Baranski's sort of cougary purr.
Yeah,
and it, you know, if the Carrie Diaries had stayed on the air long enough for high school Carrie to meet college age Samantha,
right,
she would have been perfect casting. And frankly, if they want to do Sex and the City 3 before Cynthia Nixon becomes governor of New York, they should just put Christine Baranski in the Samantha role.
I've already written the scene. They're all three of them at lunch. It's just after the funeral. they're all wearing black.
Chic black.
And Sarah Jessica Parker has a little crow on her head.
A black fascinator.
And in walks Christine Baranski, who can't find a table anywhere and just wants to share the table. And she says, oh, hello, my name is Samantha. And they all say, oh, that's so fascinating. We used to have a friend named Samantha. And they all look at the camera and they go, she's dead now. Won't you be our new Samantha friend? And then she is. And then she becomes a new Samantha friend. And the next words out of her mouth are like, I just had sex with like three dudes at once.
And scene.
That's the perfect way to do this. You're welcome, Hollywood. I know how to make this stuff happen.
I'm still waiting for your Purge Christmas pitch to get made.
Look, no one... Everyone ignores my great ideas, and so...
Actually, you know, it's funny. I told Drea Clark about that, and she said, tell him to put together an outline. I can get it to the right people. And we know people at Blumhouse, actually.
We do. Who's we?
You and I. Ryan Turek is a big wig there now.
You know Ryan Turek. I have met Ryan Turek.
Okay, fine. Okay. I know Ryan. And he's like, you know, he went from being, you know, nerd journalist.
Like, if I were next to you at a screening and he came to the screening, he would go, oh, hey, guys. Like, he would associate you, me, with you.
Right.
But if I ran into him at Gelson's while I was applauding Cher, he would just be like, who's that guy applauding Cher?
And he wouldn't be the only one. I'm
right.
So yeah, look, I acknowledge that there's a very funny Onion video review of Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, that basically says, look, just let this movie be, and if you can't, you're dead inside. And so, fine, granted, I'm dead inside. I am horrified at the thought that there's an entire generation of people for whom Mamma Mia and The Greatest Showman is what they think a screen musical is supposed to look like.
I concede that is unfortunate.
Yeah. But even trying to be generous on this one, because a lot of the early word I heard was, oh, it's better than the first one, and it's, you know, you just have to kind of go with it, and, oh, the world is a nightmare, don't you want a moment of not thinking about it? I still cringed pretty much nonstop until Cher showed up, and then when Meryl showed up. Like, those were the two moments where I was like, I felt like we were in good hands. The rest of it, oh, and can we talk about the green screen?
It's amazing.
You have so this hotel is like all outdoor courtyards.
Mm-hmm.
The party is all outdoors.
And didn't they actually film it in Greece?
Well, I, you know.
So why do they need the green screen? Unless they did things
at night
or
whatever. Because they obviously shot like enough exteriors to kind of cover their ass and shit. Like, look, we're on an island. But then once Cher enters the picture or whatnot, it's like, we're doing this in the studio.
Right.
Yeah. So again, and for.
And most of you are not going to be in the studio with Cher.
Right. And if, I don't want to hear anybody.
We're setting this up in Burbank.
anybody who gives me a hard time for enjoying Hallmark movies, I don't want to hear from you about how I needed to like Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, because the writing is maybe worse, and certainly the visual effects are.
Are you quite finished?
I'm quite finished.
All right, I'm just gonna tell you everything that's true.
Okay.
First, I'm gonna tell you about yourself. You watch like a work's week worth of Hallmark movies every July and every December. Possibly even more than a works week worth. You watch so much of that stuff, it makes me afraid for you sometimes. And I will forever bust your balls about it. Husband that I love. I walked into this movie this morning, and the minute they started singing, I kissed the teacher, and it became clear that it might have been a lesbian kiss. I was like, okay, movie. You're already stupid, but I'm okay. I just had a nice breakfast.
You were intrigued.
I just had a nice breakfast at Dupar's, a French toast and sausage. I had that feeling of Dupar's contentment.
Which I do not share with you.
Well, you're wrong about that, too.
Uh-huh.
Dupar's is this old diner in Los Angeles. It's been around for like 100 years. The waitresses all wear those old-timey waitress uniforms because they've just always worn those waitress uniforms. No one ever bothered to change them. It's all booths and, you know, stained wood paneling, and it ain't cool. It is so uncool at Dupar's that if you go there between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. on any given weekday, they have a special menu for you, and no matter what you order off that limited special menu, you pay what time it is. Meaning that if you show up at 4:17 on a Tuesday to eat your dinner, and I have because I've had to go there early to see movies or whatever that started at 6 or even 5, and I've ordered myself off that pay what time it is menu, and I have paid $4.17 for my dinner.
You know how we've talked about there being a...
I will tell you something.
A genre of restaurant.
What a great thing that is.
You know how we've talked about there being a genre of restaurant that's just called You're Old?
Yeah.
This is a You're Old.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, everyone in there at that time is like 112. But what a bargain.
You are so excited, A, to save money, and B, to eat dinner before 5. Like, that's just jackpot for you.
I just think of it as kind of like second late lunch.
Because
after that movie's over that I'm going to, that's the only reason I'm ever there at that time of day. After the movie's over, we're going to come home and I'm going to have a bowl of like Lucky Charms or whatever. So that's...
Strawberry Blast Honeycomb.
Yeah, Strawberry Blasted Honeycomb. So, okay. I concede that this movie is stupid. And because this is a clean podcast, I won't say exactly what I said yes. in the parking lot. It's stupid BS.
Yes.
Okay. And I loved it. Now, the first one is really just inept trash.
Yes.
Saved only by...
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep's given it everything.
Yeah.
Singing. And Meryl Streep can sing, but more importantly than just being able to sing, because Amanda Seyfried can sing. But Amanda Seyfried can sing in a pretty way that doesn't really necessarily emote much. Meryl Streep is acting when she sings.
Yes.
And at the end of this film, well, I'll get to that in a minute.
There are people who can only act a song, like your Rex Harrisons, you know,
yes.
who can sort of emote their way through it. Yeah. And there are people who can just
Beth
sing it.
Beth Howland.
Okay.
She alive still?
She died.
She died.
She died a couple years ago.
She's my favorite example of
that. In Company.
Like, I don't know if she can sing. I don't know if she was ever a good singer. But she sure can act a song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there are people who can sing it, but you don't feel anything. And then there's people like Meryl, like Judy Garland, who can do both.
So anyway, I concede that this is like a 2-hour Febreze commercial.
It's a solid 2 hours, too, isn't it?
It is a solid 2 hours.
Woo. Felt it.
But here's what's great about it. First of all, you got ABBA songs. Now, sometimes they're sung by people who can sing. Cher, Meryl Streep. Lily James is actually pretty good as a singer as well. Amanda Seyfried is getting better.
Yes.
Pierce Brosnan. Hang on. Pierce Brosnan only has to sing about 6 lines of SOS. And they handle him perfectly. And here's why. It's a cappella. And it's sung with a mournful tone because he's singing it to the ghost of Meryl Streep.
Right.
He's missing her. She's been dead for like a year or whatever in the film. And so his eyes well up. He's acting the song rather than singing it. As opposed to the first film where they were like, okay, now you're going to sing an entire song.
Like 3 of them, I think.
And he was, and you could see the terror on his face. This time around, he only has to sing a little bit of SOS and join in the chorus of like big numbers where you never hear his voice. Yeah. You just see his lips moving.
He remains completely unconvincing as an American, but at least they did cast Warhorse / First Brick at Stonewall to be young Pierce Brosnan, who also has the same weird, not exactly American accent, to go with Lily James's weird, not exactly American accent.
Yeah, when dude showed
as
up.
Young Meryl.
When dude showed up, was like, hey, it's Warhorse.
And you said it in a scene that had an actual horse in it.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the horse.
It's a Warhorse reunion.
I thought you were saying, was that the horse from Warhorse? I'm like, I think that horse has got to be dead by now.
It's
like
when.
No, the guy.
When Ghost of Meryl comes back at the end and sings along with Cher, it's a Silkwood reunion.
Totally. You know that Cher said she wants to do an all ABBA covers album now.
Good for her.
Yeah, I'm down.
Good for her. She can do whatever she wants. She remains relevant in every decade.
Mm.
In 2062, she's going to release an album of whatever songs or kinds of songs are popular, and it's going to be a hit.
She'll do an entire album in Cetacean.
She's going to be, you know, like, in her 14th decade of life. And people are going to be like, what's Cher up to these days? Oh, she's got a comeback. She's doing another movie.
She's doing her 14th farewell tour.
She's got a show. She's got a TV show. She's got a sitcom, variety show. She lived long enough to see the return of the variety show, and they brought her back. Okay, so Andy Garcia is in this movie. Andy Garcia is so hot.
He is what Whitney Seibold likes to call a flawless rescue stud.
He's He shows up in every scene. Andy Garcia shows up no matter what scene he's in. The camera just bathes him in love.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks at the camera like, hello. Yes, I know.
Memo to everyone.
Andy Garcia.
You will never look as good in an ascot as Andy Garcia does.
They could have put him in a male romper.
No, but the thing is, he wears a neckerchief in a way that makes you think, oh yeah, neckerchiefs are great. Everyone should wear them. It's like, no one but Andy Garcia should wear them. But when he wears them, you think they're great.
So that's great. And the women in the movie are constantly extolling the virtues of Andy Garcia's hotness. So it's not like, it's not just me.
Yeah.
The movie knows it.
It's like in Book Club where Diane Keaton's just tripping over her own tongue every time he's around.
They didn't make him look as great in Book Club. And I think it's because he was clean shaven. And here he has that impeccable
Silver Daddy beard.
Silver Daddy beard. So, Daddy Bear number two. There's more. In fact, I'll talk about him right now. In the flashbacks and in the present day.
Yeah, no, it's a running gag.
It's a running gag. There is a customs agent who insists on talking about what you're wearing, how you're dressed, how good your hair looks that day.
He liked the hair. Your hair was shorter in the passport picture. It looks better shorter.
And
that's a funny bit that works.
He is, first of all, he is one of the legitimately like funny gags who keeps going throughout the entire film.
Like that's a Richard Curtis.
But he is like he's a big burly bearded.
He's not bearded.
Bear guy. Oh yeah, he is. Start to finish.
Oh, you're right. He gets balder.
Front to back. He gets balder and grayer.
Right.
But he stays the same. And then about two-thirds of the way through the movie, he begins flirting with
Colin Firth.
With Colin Firth, and you realize, oh, okay, so this guy wants to nail Colin Firth.
Who had a boyfriend in the first movie who was never mentioned.
His boyfriend in the first movie is the guy from the Call on Me video.
Oh, right, yes.
Doesn't have anything to say in the first movie. But remember that video for the Eric Prydz?
Prydz.
Prydz, whatever, that song Call on Me that was popular about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The one dude in the aerobics class in that video, the Call on Me guy. Yes. I don't know his name, but he was Colin Firth's, like, gorgeous boyfriend in the first one.
Yes.
Well, Call on Me guy got dumped. I don't know why.
We don't know.
But Colin Firth could get it with
customs agent.
With Papa Bear customs agent.
And speaking of which, the one thing we won't specifically spoil, sit through the credits.
Sit through all the credits. Like to the bitter end.
There is a shawarma.
There is a, yes. And if you're guessing it's about the character we just mentioned,
you might be right.
You might be right. Here's another thing I like. Besides Andy Garcia being hot, and besides, you know, the 100% more Daddy Bear action in this movie than there has ever been in a Mamma Mia movie or most films. And more than just there being the kid from War Horse and a War Horse in the movie. They reprise the activity of people jumping off things jubilantly.
And throwing window shades
and
open.
And throwing window shades
Lots
open.
Lots of throwing window shades open.
And I really love that in the Mamma Mia movies. It's a signature of the Mamma Mia cinematic universe that people are jumping off things with their legs, you know, tucked under them and their arms outstretched while singing. Did they do it off the boat when they all sing Dancing Queen? Were people jumping off the boat?
They might have.
Okay.
They do it during When I Kissed the Teacher.
They do it when I kissed the teacher. They do it, like, off a dock. They do it off of, like, walls.
Yeah. There's a lot of jumping off things based choreography here.
Then the big boats are the big, you know, skidoo armada comes in and they all sing Dancing Queen again.
Okay, but here's what bugged me about that.
Life, no, nothing bugged you about that. Life should be a daily situation where you get to get on a boat and sing Dancing Queen with 100 other people. That should be every day of life.
In the first movie, the Dancing Queen number is actually kind of repurposes the song somewhat into kind of this feminist anthem. It's the one, remember Meryl singing it and all the like village, like
yes.
goat herding right. Greek ladies are yes. following yes. her through the town.
That was
square.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
That was like the, what was maybe like the one successful big number of the film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then in this one, it's just like, no, we're just going to sing Dancing Queen again, which has nothing to do with anything.
No, it has
but everybody
nothing.
Likes Dancing
it has
Queen.
Nothing to do with the plot. You actually turned to me and you were like, what's happening? And I said, nothing matters.
But I immediately thought of Muriel's Wedding,
yep.
where she talks about how life can be better than an ABBA song. Life can be better than Dancing Queen. And I thought...
Doesn't she say it can be as good as Dancing Queen?
Okay.
My life is as good as Dancing
Queen. It's as good as Dancing Queen. And I thought...
Because there's not much better than
you're
Dancing
right.
Queen.
But while watching it, I thought, this is a Dancing Queen that is not as good as life.
That's not true. They're singing Dancing Queen. That automatically makes it great. Then they're all on boats for no reason. They're just all synchronized boating.
It's the Dancing Queen. It's the ABBA flotilla.
Yeah. There's a wacky goat.
There's a wacky goat.
There's Stellan Skarsgård in a wacky fat suit playing his own playing his own twin.
Somebody on Twitter said, you can't tell me that Mamma Mia isn't just an elaborate ruse of humiliating Stellan Skarsgård.
There's an anti-Greek austerity message, or rather, a Greek anti-austerity message, yes. I should say. So it almost balances out the complete, you know...
Colonization
themes. I mean, okay, let's be real. This film is... The thesis of this film is whiteness.
Yes.
Whiteness is cool. White people are great. They love to bounce around and jump off things and sing ABBA songs.
And the world...
Be nice to them.
And the world is out there waiting for white people to discover themselves in yes. whatever foreign culture yes. they want. And Amanda Seyfried can be raised her entire life on an isolated Greek island and yet seem to have no Greekness to her whatsoever.
No evidence like, that she ever learns to speak
if
it.
If they told her she didn't speak Greek, I would totally believe it. There is nothing about her that doesn't seem like she went to like boarding school in Connecticut. But no, raised on a Greek island by this, you know, wacky free spirit and is yet completely a big slab of cream cheese. Not even feta. She's not even Greek yogurt.
Of all the messages about white people that you could have, though, in a film, I think, you know, white people can be nice sometimes and they sing ABBA songs for you is maybe the least offensive.
I suppose.
Yeah.
The least relevant to the actual behavior of most white people
in the world, though,
sadly.
I do get that.
But yes, but you know what? Create the world you want to see. I get it. World where people sing Dancing Queen on boats.
And then Hall of Presidents Cher shows up. And you applaud. It is 2018. And Cher is singing songs in a movie. And you don't deserve her.
No.
You jerks. And you better applaud for her.
And the movie has been very cagey about not letting us know that Andy Garcia's character's name is really Fernando. So that's that's how they're able to spring that one on you. And that was a moment that was great. Although, and this is in the trailer, there's a part where like she and Andy Garcia like intertwine arms and their hands on each other's shoulders and rock back and forth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, this is the choreography we're getting. And right. This is all the choreography
no,
we're getting.
It's fine. Listen, you got Cher. Isn't that enough?
I know.
Isn't that enough for you?
I was thinking about Lucille Ball in MAME, and I looked it up later, and Cher is actually almost 10 years older than Lucille Ball in MAME, and she is far more spry.
I don't think Cher smokes.
That probably helps.
Lucy had a pack a day habit.
Gary, get me my cigarettes.
Right. And then the ghost of Meryl Streep shows up and sings My Love, My Life.
Yes.
And I actually started crying.
I got a little bit of a lump in my throat, where is that for the rest of the movie? Like, they make you wait nearly 2 hours for the one moment of actual emotional impact.
I believe, and I'm being very serious right now. I know I've been goofing around with you this whole time, but I'm being very serious. There are moments of genuine wit and genuine pleasure in this film, and they are not about anything beyond giving you that lowest common denominator basic stuff that you sort of secretly crave. It is, as I said, a 2-hour Febreze commercial. It is the apps menu at Chili's. It is, you know, the color blue on a Disney or ABC sitcom. It is the thing you know you have paid to see.
It is drops of Jupiter in an elevator.
Yes. And for 2 hours, I didn't think about that man. And I didn't think about the collapse of civilization. And I didn't think about how much I hate that man. All I thought about was how much I love ABBA, and how much I love Cher, and how much I love Meryl Streep. And also how much I hate overalls on just about anybody, but not enough to leave.
It's worth noting, at the Grove, where we saw the movie, there is a banner for Mamma Mia stretched over, like, the street that runs down the middle of it that is made of overalls.
Made entirely of overalls, and each overall has a letter of the title in the film. Yeah. I had a wonderful time.
Well, I'm happy for you.
And
I'm sure a lot of people will, and I get it. I know that this is just me being curmudgeonly, but, like, I do love actual ABBA, and I do love actual musicals. There's just something about...
Oh, I'm not saying this is an actual musical. Don't put words in my mouth.
Okay, fine.
This is...
But I can't... there's just something about these that I find so irritating that I can't just let go and let it wash over me and, you know, have the all-you-can-eat riblets at Applebee's. I just can't.
As you know, for anyone who's not a first-time listener... I generally tend to apply more exacting standards to mainstream Hollywood entertainment.
Yeah, of the two of us, I'm the pushover.
But I just didn't feel like it today.
Okay, fair enough.
And it was all because they started singing When I Kissed the Teacher at the very beginning of the movie, and I thought, okay, sure, fine.
So basically, if the world has
literally broken, nothing matters.
If the world has broken you,
I'm broken inside. The world has crushed me, and. Today wasn't the day for a neoliberal critique of neoliberalism. Sorry. That was what I'm meaning to say. You know, a takedown of late stage capitalism. You know, I just needed
Satan.
I needed the French toast at Dupar's, and I needed Meryl Streep singing that song, and I needed Cher and Benny playing the piano and grinning at the camera. That's what I needed.
So I have a thought. We're 52 minutes in.
And we have only talked about Mamma Mia 2.
What if we make this like a special standalone episode? And then we do another one where we kind of run through.
We spent an hour talking about Mamma Mia.
Exclamation point, colon, here we go again.
You know, it's funny, because I was about to hold up my hand, which is our private silent signal to stop the recording so that we can fix something or question something, that a fact or whatever, do some check-in.
Yeah.
You guys never know that it's happening, because the editing is usually pretty seamless, but I was about to raise my hand to you and say, how many minutes have we been going? Because I was thinking, we've been going probably like 30 minutes on this.
No.
We should not go through. We should probably not go over 30 minutes on Mamma Mia.
We're at 53.
We're at 53 minutes.
So I think we just release this into the world as its own thing. And then we'll do an episode where we talk about the many, many movies of the last couple of weeks that we have caught up with, or that we need to catch up with because we missed a week.
Do you want to do another one tomorrow where we do the rest of the films?
Sure. That works for me.
Here's another thing for you first-time listeners. We don't go with a big plan most of the time.
Yeah, no, we totally make this thing up as we go along.
Now you're hearing it. You're hearing us actually have a
we're having a production meeting.
A production run-of-show meeting on the show. So you're welcome.
So, all right, we'll be back this weekend to talk about Skyscraper and Eighth Grade.
Oh, I do have a little list.
Oh, okay.
Eighth Grade, Skyscraper, McQueen, Hotel Transylvania 3.
Mm-hmm.
Les Parents Terribles.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
Yes. Reissue.
I'm French now. Yeah, maybe I'll get a chance to go see Equalizer 2, because I haven't caught
Yeah,
up. I haven't caught up
haven't
to that
seen
one
that
yet.
yet. You haven't seen Blind Spotting yet. We'll talk about that when we've both seen
Right.
it. So, all right. Anyway, as we were mentioning earlier, we have a Patreon
Oh
page.
yeah, the sticker. Okay, so I'm gonna tell you in time me 60 seconds.
All right, fine. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Go.
At patreon.com/linoleumknife, we have a Patreon where if you want to hear other shows, other digital content from us, LKTV, a podcast about television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a podcast about food that is irresponsibly hosted by two film critics, Linoleum Nights, a podcast about politics, sex, religion, and swears, you can do that. And whatever you want is based on what you subscribe at, like per month. So, you guys, the sticker that we were talking about is only for people who subscribe at the two lowest levels. If you are a $4 subscriber and a $7 or a $7 subscriber, then you get a Linoleum Knife sticker. If you're like rich and you have more money to burn, you get other things that are fantastic.
You get the t-shirt.
You get
our
the t-shirts
magnet.
Or the mugs or the magnet.
The
or
Christmas
the,
ornament.
The Christmas ornament. You get all kinds of things, but what you don't get is the thing that the $4 and $7 people get, which is just the sticker. It's just a thank you for being a $4 and $7 person. And those stickers just came in about 2 weeks ago, and I just started sending them out. So if you're already a $4 or $7 person, look for your mail. Look in the mail, because you're going to get an envelope from me personally with a sticker in it. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Check out our friends online. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Go to listen to Cancel Too Soon with Bibbs and Whitney. Also check out their show on the Schmoes Know Network, critically acclaimed. And check out other shows at Schmoes Know. Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. If you haven't been to Filmstruck yet to check out my introductions of the films of Derek Jarman, do
yep.
that, please. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music, bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. We are big fans, and we appreciate you letting us use your music every week. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at LinoleumCast. You can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating. We'll read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Stitcher.com, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, all the apps just about. I'm trying to get us on SoundCloud. It's complicated, but I'm going to make it work.
Can we be SoundCloud rappers? Like Lil Xan?
I don't think
we
can be SoundCloud podcasters. That's all I'm promising. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. On a normal
episode,
probably
too old to be SoundCloud rappers.
I think we are. On a normal episode, we actually read letters from listeners, but this is sort of a weird one, so we're not. But we will soon, I promise. And
this was entirely an accident.
This was not where we were planning to go at all.
Good.
But here you go.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks for listening. We'll be back with more stuff later this weekend. So until next time,
goodbye.